How did you conceive of the idea to do a science show? How did that happen?
It happened because I was trained to be a science teacher, but never did teach. Instead, was far more interested in the theater and radio and television and so forth. And when it came time to do something about television, I went to the library and looked up all the things that kids could do, like what to do on a rainy day, for example.
Sure.
And made notes and organized them according to what I thought was the most significant and so forth. And then went around and tried to sell it to television stations, although there weren't that many around in those days, 1951. And fortunately, I found the Serial Institute, which is an organization of serial manufacturers, were looking for a program that had a strong educational flavor in order to be able to put a breakfast message in the middle of it. Eat a good breakfast of fruit, cereal, right. Milk, bread and butter, or other foods for variety, like eggs, or, you know, and so forth. And they bought the program and, in effect, took it to NBC. And NBC put it on the air without charging the Serial Institute time. They made a sort of contribution.
Sure.
It was a very unusual arrangement in which the Serial Institute, in effect, underwrote a public affairs program.
Which really didn't happen a lot in those days. Not like that.
Never would happen again like that in a million years.
Exactly. How did you, Don, come up with the ideas of the various science topics?
As I said, I was trained to be a science teacher, so I knew there were a lot of demonstrations that teachers used in class, and all I did was sort of adapt them for television, and came up with the idea finally of having a child come over to my house, supposedly.
Sure.
And the two of us did experiments sort of together, and That was one of the things that was a compliment to me, because when I would go around and see kids, they would ask how they could get on the show because they thought it was looked like a lot of fun.
Sure.
Which was a great compliment.
It was. Now, you would always bring in, what, one child or maybe two at the most? You didn't have like a whole audience of kids, did you?
Never more than one.
Oh, just the one?
Just one. Either the boy or the girl, one or the other.
I was watching, and I remembered it. And then when I watched one of your DVDs, I remember the one you did of electricity with a little kid named Alan. And this was just how long did it take you to put that apparatus together? Because it went through, and you were showing him the various stages of electricity and how it's created. It went through maybe like five or six different stages. How long did it take you to put that together?
Obviously, no more than a week, because we did a live show, every weekend. So I had a crew of three people who helped me put it together, so that once I could outline it, they could go ahead and do a lot of the work.
To a lot of people who might not have seen that, it was an incredible array of things where a record would vibrate and a spoon would be full of a liquid. The spoon would tip. The liquid would go into another chemical. The chemical would catch on fire. The heat would move a balloon with a light, and it just went on and on. It was just fantastic. Because these were live shows, Mr. Wizard, did anything ever go wrong and you had to scramble fast to try to fix it?
Yeah, every once in a while something would go wrong, but when you're doing a live show and something goes wrong, you can ad lib your way around it in order to explain what happened and so on and so forth. So that added an element of suspense as far as the audience was concerned and as far as I was concerned as well. So very seldom did something go wrong that was so drastic that we had to resort to severe measures. One of the experiments that I did that did go wrong, NBC left it in.
Uh-huh.
In other words, we didn't never edit the tape.
Yeah.
So the fact that I made a horrible error and was seen from coast to coast.
You had fun doing these programs. When I looked at some of the kids who are on the shows, now they must be 40, 50, 55 years old. It's amazing.
Right.
It's like, for me, it's almost like time stood still. When I looked at those DVDs, I sometimes think, I'm still a kid. You know what? I'm Peter Pan looking at those shows.
Yeah.
You don't age. I had an opportunity to meet you in St. Louis. It must have been about 1979 or 80. I was a news director at the NBC television station there. And you were putting together a board of news directors as an advisory committee for the snippets that you would send out to television stations. And I had a great time doing that. And it looked great on my resume, by the way. I think it got me my other jobs.
Yeah.
As you look back at your career, and you're 88 years old, you're going to be 88 years old, what has been for you the most satisfying thing you've done?
Probably the most satisfying thing is the fact that people who are scientists say that Mr. Wizard, in effect, influenced them, and that they got interested in science because of Mr. Wizard, which, of course, is a great compliment. And many of them have said that they are scientists because of Mr. Wizard, which I don't think is true, but I don't argue with them.
Well, I'll tell you, one of my friends, and you're going to love this story, one of my friends, his name was Gary Frank. Is Gary Frank. He's still alive. And Gary and I grew up in Detroit, and we used to watch Mr. Wizard. And we love science. And there, two people in science had an effect on my life. And I've talked to one, and now I've talked to the other, you. One was a fellow by the name of Dr. Morgus, who was like a zany television character. And then there was you, the person who brought us real science. But my friend used to watch you all the time, Don, and you had such an effect on him. He eventually went off and built the engines for the space shuttle.
Oh, okay.
How about that? Right. So, I mean, your tentacles go everywhere. In your opinion, what would you recommend to young people today who don't have the benefit of seeing TV shows like we saw when we were a kid? But what would you tell a kid today if you met one, a 10-year-old, who wants to get into science?
Well, you certainly don't do it via television. That's for sure. A kid interested in science obviously should take a lot of math and as much science as he possibly can in school. And we should not just say he. We're trying to get girls interested.
Right.
And the whole thing as well. And they don't necessarily have to be interested in science as such, because they can be very active in engineering, which is the practical application of science and so forth.
You know, I'm going to say that you are, without a doubt, one of the living legends of television. There's just a few people out there that I think have had an effect on people. You know, in his own way, Captain Kangaroo did a marvelous job, I think, of getting kids to go in the right direction. Soupy Sales was funny in his own way. And then you, Don Herbert, Mr. Wizard. How'd you come up with the name, Mr. Wizard?
I had originally a title for the show. I think it was like Our Amazing World or something like that. You know, not a very exciting title. And I was doing an audition for an advertising agency, and the account executive and I were going up in the elevator, and he said, "I don't like your title particularly." I said, "Well, I don't either, but I can't think of a better one." And he said, "Why don't you call it Wizard?" I said, well, I didn't like that too. I liked the idea of it, but I suggesting that there was an old codger with a
big old hat.
With stars and moons in it and so forth and so forth. So I don't want people to think that that's what the program is like.
Right.
So I came up with the idea of adding Mr. to it in order to sort of get away from that title. So Mr. Wizard, he said, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. And he liked the title very much. However, he didn't buy the show in spite of the fact of the new title. But that's how the name was born. And, of course, I've been called Mr. Wizard ever since.